Hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night to you and all that kind of stuff. What a little bit of fun I just had then, just as we were about to get started. And we are started now, aren't we? Ah, we're not, actually. Let me just... I'm started on certain stations. Excuse me while I continue to have a wonderful time of things. Here we go, hang on. There we go. Press button A. Yes, press button B. Come on. Hurrah! Hi, let's start again, shall we? Some of you have just tuned in, don't think I'm starting again, but I am. It's Thursday, the 9th of November, 2023. And this is Paul English Live here on WBN324.com. Welcome to the show. Welcome back. A week goes quickly, doesn't it? The next one will too. I'm only one man, but there are 8,000 buttons. You try giving it a go. Just picture a man pressing buttons and looking at screens. I've just had one of those sorts of moments at the start of today's show. That's been fun. That's why you weren't hearing any interesting, pithy comments interspersed in the music, apart from this one. Yeah. Well, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night to you, wherever you may be. It is, as I said, just a few hectic minutes ago, Thursday, the 9th of November, 2023, and we're going out live here today. This is Paul English Live at paulenglishlive.com. I'm here every Thursday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Someone's just said buttons matter. They do, particularly... particularly in the old-fashioned trousers with the fly, don't they? But let's not go there straight away. So, yeah, welcome to the show. We're going out over WBN324 and WBN324.com and .zil, Z-I-L, Z-I-L, depending on how you say your Zs. We're also on Rumble. We're on Odyssey. We're on Freefall Radio out of South Africa. We just got a new nifty graphic for them from them as well the other day. So that's on the website. Nice South African flag there. And we're also on Speak Free Radio. Where else are we? We're not on Telegram. Oh, we're also on Global Voice Network, I think. So shout out to everybody. But our main port of call, WBN324. So to all the listeners there, it's great to join you. I think you've just been regaled with lots of news and stuff. This is a slightly different sort of show. I don't try to do all the sort of current news. Because frankly, I can't be bothered to read it because it's the same as all the news was 20 years ago. Or is that true? No, it's probably not true, but it's certainly been a hectic week news-wise. And today's going to be a bit of a grab bag. That's special euphemistic language for I've got 500 things on my screens. I don't know where to begin or start. And I don't know whether there's a common thread to today's show because there's been so much going on. Last week's show with David Fleming was a lot of fun, and I liked it a lot because David did an awful lot of the talking, which was great. And if you want to do some talking tonight, you can. Now, I always sort of leave the sort of phone connecting into the studio type thing open most of the show, even though we'll tend to take these things towards the end. You know, that kind of thing. That's what we would probably do. But what I'm trying to do tonight is I'm trialing something technically. I'm sure you're all finding this tremendously exciting, but it's got to be done. So we can actually take calls in today. That's the Royal We, and we'll be coming over to Royal Matters as well. We can also take calls in over the internet and the interwebs on paulenglishlive.com/call. So if you're in front of a PC or even on your phone and you've got a browser and an internet connection, that's probably the best way to plug in because you'll get the best audio quality. And I know you all want to sound wonderful and marvelous and lovely and all that kind of stuff. So that'd be great. But I'm trialing phone numbers today. Now, it's a little clunky because you have to put a code number in and maybe no one's even going to call up. But, you know, best played laid plans of mice and geese and all that kind of stuff. So the I'm going to read these numbers out. Actually, if you're over on Rumble, which is probably the main thing, and I'm looking at the Rumble chat now, just got started, a few people in there, who knows, it'll probably get a bit boisterous, you know, as things go through, or maybe not, as the case may be. But we got two dial-in numbers. Actually, that's a fib. There are tons of the things. They're all over the world, these things. But primarily, of course, this show goes out to English listeners and speakers in the United Kingdom, although that's a bit of a stretch to call it that these days, and the United States. Similarly, also a bit of a stretch to call it United. So, you know, United is, we probably need to be just calling it the States and the Kingdom from now on, because the United bit is, it's not looking too good, is it? But if you go over to rumble.com or go over to Paul English Live and then click the Rumble link and then go through to Rumble and go into the, what a palaver, go into the chat room there, which is the one I tend to look at. I put a little post up with the numbers in there right at the top of the thread. So you can call him from the UK and you can call him from the US. And when you get through, and I'll say this all again probably in the second half, when you get through, you have to enter a code. And it's a lovely code. I mean, as codes go, as number codes go, this was really rather fortunate. So the code is 566699. Isn't that lovely? I'm sure you're all very thrilled to hear that. 566699 hash. There's a lady at the other end, so when you call through, she says, enter the code or whatever it is. That's what you'll have to enter through. 566699. And if you forget all this, I'll repeat it again a little bit later. And then to call him from the UK, it's 03303902135. There'll be a test on this later. 03303902135. And if you're calling in from the US, it would be 605-313-5866. And if this turns out to be okay, or, you know, I won't know if nobody calls in. You have to call in now, you know. But if it turns out technically to be okay, then I think in the future, imminently, we'll be able to switch over to just a single number for each country. We can drop this access code thing. But I just wanted to test it today to see if it's really going to pan out, you know. Because this is a Billy No Mates production today. This is a solo jaunt, apart from you. So you can always butt in and things like that. So there we go. Now, what did I want to talk? What did I want to start off with? My week. No, I didn't really. I'm sure you've all had a week. Of course, the darkness is now fully upon us. And I'm hoping to get back, by the way, to David Fleming at some point. We had a fantastic conversation after the show last week. And thanks for the people that sent little positive comments in. These efforts politically, something which I have traditionally steered well clear of, anybody that's kind of listened to my comments over the years, sorry about that. But if you have, you'll know that I'm not too keen on the political process as being the route to a solution. However, indirectly, I think it could be, it might now be really time for these sorts of things. Not because necessarily a party could win, but because it could be a rallying point for everybody who is distressed, and any other word you care to think about, with the state of affairs in the world. And so that could turn out to be quite good. Anyway, I'm hoping to have a few more conversations with David in the future. And there's a couple of other people as well that are sort of in the same space. So we talked for about an hour and a half last week after the show. I had a cracking conversation with him. And I think there might be some mileage in that in the weeks to come. So hopefully, at some point soon, he will come back. Good grief. Look at this. This is outrageous. Somebody is testing the phone, testing me already on the phone system. Hang on, just hold on a second. Let's see if this works. I bet you're loving all this, aren't you? Here we go. Hang on. Right. Hello there. Hello there, wireless caller. Hello. Area code 330. Hi, welcome to the show. Who am I speaking with?
My name is Joe Miller. I'm from the United States.
Joe Miller from the United States, you've just won first prize in the first person to call in on the telephone system. So a bag of toffees will be on its way to you soon, except I don't want to know where you live because you're not going to get them anyway. It's just a sort of gesture that I make. But welcome, Joe. Oh. Fantastic. Whereabouts in the States are you?
In Ohio, the state of Ohio. Now, I am 17 miles south of the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio.
All right. Okay, that's good. Yeah. And the U.S. football season is underway right now. Of course, we don't call it football over here. We call it something else. But we call our thing football, and you call your thing football, don't you? But I know of which sport you are referring to, yes.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's the National Felon League.
Well, it's getting that way. It's definitely getting that way, and I need to do it. We need to probably do a show at some point about sport. I don't mean in terms of the performance of teams, but it's the fact over here that it's been kind of culturally hijacked in some ways. It's not the thing it used to be. It doesn't occupy the culturally meaningful position it used to occupy in British life. Which is a thing that I don't know what it's like for you in the States with all this kind of stuff. I was listening to somebody on a show a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about the use of, I think it was American football and other things, to try and phase them out so that they don't even exist in your culture anymore. Have you heard anything about that?
About 15 years ago, I remember a conservative talk radio show guy, Rush Limbaugh. He said one day it will be phased out for whatever reason. But the rules have really changed in how to tackle and so forth, and it filters clear down to, like, my 11-year-old grandson's football, how they have to not tackle or tackle and such.
That's yeah. So interesting, because it's exactly the same in British football. It used to be a much more robust game, let's put it that way. In fact, it was... Half of the time, it used to be a fight on the field, and there used to be a ball floating around somewhere in the background. There used to be a lot of very serious physical aggression in British football. It's what made it quite spectacular in a way. Not the most skillful game necessarily, but it was full of passion and fight. So they've kind of watered down a lot of those aspects of what we think of as traditional sports. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. And then the political liberals. Side of things had to come in when the one very popular San Francisco quarterback and teammates and such would take a knee when the national anthem was being played.
Mm.
Of course, that stirred up, that made a political upheaval. And
so did you get quite cross about that, Joe? Was that quite irritating for you, those players taking the knee?
I kept telling my wife, you know, I really did go and serve in the military to protect these guys' disloyalty, you know.
Yep.
I kept telling myself that to keep from blowing up.
I don't blame you. Well, we had there were similar things like that over here. They seem to have got phased out. I don't know. I don't watch it anymore. It used to be, I mean, basically, traditionally, it's been a pressure valve, a release for the working man over here. That's where sort of soccer, you know, as you would call it, comes from. It was working men. It was their time off on a Saturday. They'd all be working Saturday morning, even the professionals in the 1800s. And then they'd, you know, they weren't paid very much, but they were paid something for it. And then they would go and play football at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was it. And it was, you know, of the people, a working man's sport, really, over here, very much so.
It was a way to have a team sport. If you wanted to have a fist fight with a guy, you just played football and you rammed each other really hard and then shook hands after the game. Now it's like they get millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But I haven't watched the football in 10 or 12 years.
No, I think the over-professionalization of sports has cut them off in some way. But then, you know, you're probably a similar... I'm in my 60s, right? My early 60s. Maybe you're a similar sort of generation.
Oh, okay.
And we sound like middle-aged farts, really. You know, in my day, it was like this and all that kind of stuff. And I've talked to people about this who are still pretty passionate about football over here. I'm not one of those people, but... you know, of course, I'm twisting the conversation a certain way here, Joe, which is that I see it as part of this sort of this globalization effect. I mean, one of the things I was hearing, that you'll probably keep baseball because baseball has been internationalized. I know it's massive in Japan and things like that, but I think they might want to get rid of football because in its true essence, and that's American football, it's very much that aspect of the rugged American individualism is an aspect, cultural aspect of the game. And I don't think they want you to have that. That's why they've also sort of nullified the idea of the British soccer game. It's not like it used to be. You know.
Yes, the masculinity of it all is abhorring. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Grown men ramming into each other shouldn't be doing that. We should be maybe holding each other's hands or something.
Yeah, I know.
That would make the liberals...
Well, whenever I'm out in a crowd, Joe, I always try to find a man and go and hold his hand and say, there, you know, because this is the way that the world's going. because, you know, you just want to be friendly with people, don't you? You don't want to think bad of you. I mean, they might think you're a racist or something, you know, and I just want to, I'm not a racist, by the way, here, hold my hand and stuff like that. It's all gone quite barking mad, the whole thing, yeah. Was there anything else other than football? Were you calling to be the first caller in? So you've won. I mean, that's it. You know, John Miller from Ohio, you win.
I'm so very proud of myself that I actually finally got through because all these years I've been thinking about calling in to shows and so forth, and I just never had the fortitude or the thought of having enough to say to merit a good phone call. However, I've been on EFR with Eli James now for about 8 years or so, and I remember the days when you and he did shows together.
Yes.
Yeah, so your voice is very familiar to me.
I understand, yeah. Eli, I was contacting him only the other day. He had a little health scare over the weekend, but I understand he's recovering well. And at some point, I think in the future, I'll get him on here for us to do a sort of a very basic look at scriptural history, because I suppose what I'm trying to do here is cover an awful lot of different topics just to keep moving them around a bit in all sorts of ways with a little bit of current news as well. Eli's got obviously a very deep knowledge with what I would suggest is a very accurate understanding of scripture based on understanding the true meaning of words, which of course is not just in that field, it's in the field of politics and elsewhere, you know, where we are continually being misled by sort of misdirected through words, that kind of thing. Yeah?
Well, yes, the war on words. Yes, exactly, Paul. I'm so with you 100% on that.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic. Joe, I'd like to move on with the show, if that's okay. I'm not trying to get rid of you. You can call back later if you want.
Thank you for all your time you give. I've taken plenty of time off the show, so I'll keep praying for everything you do, and I'll be listening.
Wonderful, Joe. It's great. Great to hear from you. Anyway, fantastic. Joe Miller, Ohio, you win first prize. No one else will be the first person to call in over this thing, so well done. Brilliant. Thanks. God bless. Have a cracking rest of day, and hopefully I might say something interesting over the next hour and 40 minutes, so that's what we're looking for. Keep good.
You got it.
Okay. Thanks, Joe.
Yep.
Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, there we go. See, it worked. I think that kind of worked, didn't it? Did it work? It worked here at this end, and I think it went out fine at that end, from what I can see. So, yeah, hey, there we go. Now, where was I before Joe so rudely interrupted me with stories about American football and the effeminization of professional sports, which is a topic worthy of considerable chat at some point, as is just about every other topic in the world right now. I want to go back to something I just covered relatively briefly last week, because I didn't realize that the theme would naturally carry on this week. If you tuned in last week or have listened or whatever, I was talking about one Guy Fawkes, because it was appropriate last week, Guy Fawkes, and Guido Fawkes, as he was known. Very interesting man, if you look him up. He came from a privileged background. Yes, we had privilege back then. And it's a very interesting story. But the actual event of which he is famous took place on November the 5th. And, of course, last week's show was the 2nd, so we were a few days before that, and now we're a few days after it. But during this week, there was the state opening of Parliament, and I suddenly realized, of course, that the reason why it was November the 5th is that back in whenever it was, 1605, was it, or something? I can't remember. That would have been the date of the state opening of Parliament. Of course it was, you know, because James the 1st and his wife was been there, all ready to be blown up. And unfortunately he got caught, so they didn't get blown up. Or fortunately he got caught and they didn't get blown up. It all depends which side you're standing on. I'm not for blowing anybody up, frankly. I don't think it resolves too much. It just sends in a chain of events into action, which always tend out, you know, to be pretty bad, don't they? However, this week, of course, silly old me, was the state opening of Parliament here in the UK. Now, it's a sort of ceremonial type thing. It's quite interesting in a way because it symbolizes certain things which took place in England in the 17th century, in the 1600s, with regards to Charles the First. And our current monarch, of course, is Charles the Third. So there was another one in the middle, you know, Charles the Second, actually. Yes. Yeah, so it's been a long time. I think that was Charles the First's son. In fact, it was. So he also was running around in the 1600s. So a long time since we've had a right Charlie on the throne. And I don't want to be rude to the monarch, but I will be at some point, but not necessarily right now. And anyway, the state opening of Parliament is... it symbolizes certain things which took place under Charles the First's reign, which were all pivotal in setting off the so-called English Civil War and the arrival of democracy here in England for proper, as it were. There is a character called Black Rod, and there's also a knocking of the door. I'm not going to explain the whole thing. It's really worthwhile going and reading it because it's quite a laborious description of things. But it was all on TV this week for those that wanted to watch it. Charles turns up and he reads a speech. But before I just go into that speech, because I've got it and I wanted to kind of go through it a little bit with you. Where was this thing that... that's right. Okay, so this ritual, the knocking of the door, it says, is strongly associated with the occasion when in 1642, you remember, King Charles I stormed into the House of Commons in an unsuccessful attempt to arrest 5 members of Parliament, including the celebrated English patriot and leading parliamentarian John Hampden. There was also another guy called Pym, who was also pivotal in this particular situation. And it says, since that time, I'm reading from Wikipedia, but this is accurate stuff, okay? Since that time, no British monarch has entered the House of Commons when it is sitting. In fact, it's naughty, you're not allowed to do it. The door-closing ritual, however, predates the 1640s. Now, what's interesting about it is that this led through into the Civil War. And to this day, the king, basically, they have to ask permission to go into the Houses of Parliament. There's all sorts of things that take place around this. And they love the rigmarole and all that kind of stuff. And they're all having a good time. But I managed to catch it live on TV. I didn't plan my day around this. It just happened to be on whilst I was doing something with porridge. I can't quite remember what, but it was probably sort of useful at the time. And I managed to catch a speech. And I want to give it to you. All right. I want to run through it. Now, it's 10 minutes long. I don't know whether we're going to do the whole 10 minutes because it's going to be rather taxing on everybody's patience, I think. But I really want to run the first 2 minutes past you. And then I'm going to make a couple of comments about it, because the first 2 minutes alone, as I was listening to them live, really got me thinking a bit. Not in a profound way. Not in a profound way. Here we go. Listen to this, if you can.
My lords and members of the House of Commons, it is mindful of a legacy of service and devotion to this country set by my beloved mother, the late Queen, that I deliver this, the first King's Speech, in over 70 years. The impact of COVID and the war in Ukraine have created significant long-term challenges for the United Kingdom. That is why my government's priority is to make the difficult but necessary long-term decisions to change this country for the better. My minister's focus is on increasing economic growth and safeguarding the health and security of the British people for generations to come. My government will continue to take action to bring down inflation, to ease the cost of living for families, and help businesses fund new jobs and investment. My ministers will support the Bank of England to return inflation to target by taking responsible decisions on spending and borrowing. These decisions will help household finances, reduce public sector debt, and safeguard the financial security of the country. Legislation will be introduced to strengthen the United Kingdom's energy security and reduce reliance on volatile international energy markets and hostile foreign regimes. This bill will support the future licensing of new oil and gas fields, helping the country to transition to net zero by 2050 without adding undue burdens on households.
That's the first 2 minutes of it. And what struck me about it was how irrelevant it all was. Now, this is me being the cocky northerner, but I don't see the point in addressing any of these things. Now, that script, he didn't write that. These words that come out of his mouth, and this is a tradition that goes back. In fact, it's probably a law or something, so don't ask me. I'm not a constitutional expert with these things, thankfully. Don't want to be either. The speech is written for him by the party in power, and then they are rephrased as if he is appointing the government to do these things, but they're trying to indicate all these tasks and these wonderful things that they're about to do for us, you know, because they're always doing these wonderful things, right? But the whole idea of the points that are being raised seems to me to be made irrelevant because, and I mean all of them, because none of them are based in a really determined effort to solve any of the issues. Are they? Maybe you think they are. Maybe we're supposed to get drawn into this endless political squabbling and debate about do this and do that and all that kind of stuff. When he started talking about the Bank of England, that's a bit where my ears pricked up, and I thought, what are you talking about? We're going to be responsible on lending and borrowing. You see, one of the things I would suggest that would happen were the banking system to be structured as an engineering tool, which it needs to be, and that you remove the idea of the profit motive from the banking and financial services sector. That's going to go down well, isn't it? Because everybody thinks that the purpose of life is to continually make a profit over things. But once you've done that, the whole idea of combating inflation and dealing with this and sincere, responsible borrowing and all that other guff that they talk about that goes around these issues, it goes out the window, right? Well, of course, I'm being slightly overly emphatic, and no doubt there are certain little things, certain little adjustments, certain little details that you must take into account. But The simple truth, as I see it, is this. We don't know at all what the real actual economic problems are because we don't have a transparent engineering financial system that works for the people. We have a financial services sector of which the central bank is the prominent and key part. It aids and abets all this stuff, which has designed a system to serve and to enrich those that are closest to it. That's how it's built up all this power since 1694, which is when it occurred. So you can see in the 1600s, it kicked off with a bang and it ended with a bang, and we've been in the sort of aftermath of that for a long time. What happened in England in the 1600s has sent ripples all over the place because of the timing, the technology at the time, which was boats, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's had a massive impact. Why do we need a government to do these things? We actually, you see, if a government did its real task, I'm just speculating here, call me silly. If a government did its real task, its actual job surely would be to put itself out of business, right? Wouldn't it? Isn't the purpose of a government to no longer to get everything operating so well that you wouldn't really need it much, or that you should have a lot less government? Earlier in the week, I caught something on TV. You know these programs where they, maybe you have them in the States, we've certainly got quite a lot of them over here. I think it's because they're pretty cost-effective to put together. They can prove to be moderately educational and interesting from time to time. This was one where people found old artifacts or things kicking around in the attic or the barn or the field or whatever they owned. And they would bring it in to a group of experts and who would look at it and say, "Ooh, what's this? This is quite interesting. And what's it worth?" And all this kind of stuff. And then after they've had a bit of fun sort of guessing what it is, the person who's brought it in will tell them what it is. And then they'll go, "Oh, yeah, that's going to be worth this," and blah, blah, blah. This woman brought in a mechanical sheep shearer and made about 1908, not long ago. Yeah, okay, so I wasn't born then, and probably most of you weren't born. In fact, I hope not. Or maybe I hope you were. That means we've got some people in 115, which is not too bad, or whatever it is. But, yeah, she brought this thing in, and it had to be operated by two men. One was the man that provided the motive power. He had like a, it was a bit like a bicycle crank, two cranks, put your hand on each side, at chest height, and, you know, it's like a hand pulley, just spinning this wheel round, which caused the rest of the contraption to spin round, which caused a cutting head at the end of this sort of flexible metal tube to spin the cutting shears, which weren't on it in this particular model. They had to be refitted, but we got the idea. And prior to this arrival, people used to basically shear sheep with, I guess, like pruning shears. In fact, probably a little bit more advanced and designed specifically to deal with the toughness of sheep wool. But you're basically talking about a lot of sheep barbers all over England and elsewhere, particularly in New Zealand, which is full of sheep. I must stay on track. I mustn't think about sheep jokes just yet. So that's what they did until this came along. And it used to take quite a lot of time to trim a sheep, surely. And therefore, it was labor-intensive. This is just about 125 years ago. It's not long ago, really. Turn of the last century, early 1900s. This thing comes along, and two guys can really begin to literally motor with it. Albeit, it didn't have a motorized source. That was provided by human manpower. And the woman was saying that it was her granddad's. He'd had it early on. So this was before they even had electricity in parts of England in the 20s and 30s. So it'd been used in the 1910s, 1920s. And they managed with this, they could shear a sheep in about 3 minutes, which was just a massive improvement over doing it by hand. I don't know how long it took by hand, but you'd think at least quarter of an hour, wouldn't you? I don't know. Maybe they weren't too bothered about how the sheep looked afterwards. Didn't give it a nice haircut. They just took the wool off, that kind of stuff, you know. So it was tremendous, really interesting. I find these things interesting. You know, I'm at that age where I do sheep shearing equipment. Yeah, come on, keep up. So they were all talking about this, and it was quite an elegant bit of machinery. As I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, things have really come on, haven't they, in 125 years? I mean, they came on a lot with that when you think about the amount of labor saved. And then you get the electric ones, which is what they use today. And I think the world record now for shearing a sheep, and if we've got any sheep shearers listening, you can call in and let me know. I know it's a growing hobby here in the UK. I'm making all this stuff up, by the way. The it's 32 seconds. Huh? Now, I've actually seen some of that. They used to have some, there used to be a TV program for teenagers and young people called the Guinness Book of Records. So they took the Guinness Book of Records, they turned it into a TV show here in the 70s. And one time they had the world champion sheep shearer on with his electric shears and he did it in 32 seconds or whatever. It might be even faster than that today, but that's pretty fast, isn't it? And you've got to sort of feel a little bit maybe for the sheep, or maybe not. Maybe you're just looking forward to a nice mutton pie or something like that. But there it is, all warm and cozy, and half a minute later it's shivering. It's got nothing left on. It's a bit much, isn't it? But very impressive. Okay, so this is not really about sheep shearing. It's just about the advance of technology. So we've had these improvements, have we not, in all these technical spheres. You can now shear a sheep in 30 seconds, if you like, if you want to get into that kind of stuff. We've all got motor cars. All of this stuff has happened, and all of this, let's call it progress. I mean, it's a dubious word at the best times because it giveth and it taketh with the same hand almost. But in terms of the production of stuff that you need to live, the truth is that things are probably, I suppose you would say, amazing. I mean, if you were to go back to people in 1908 and say, look, not only do we not have to shear sheep by hand anymore, but we do this, and we can do this, and we can jump on planes. None of those things existed in 1908. It's quite a difficult thing for most of us to imagine. So we've actually, I would suggest, solved food production. We certainly have in the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, we're about to not be allowed to solve it. That's really what's going on. But we have, in fact, solved it, and it's probably solved as well without the use of agrochemicals, which is another byproduct of the banking industry. Once people are into borrowing money to buy agrochemicals to do these things, they're very interested in perpetuating that line of graft, right? And, of course, the food's not as good, no matter what they say. And the rotation of crops and the leaving of fallow land one in every 7 years works. It works with the rhythms and the strength of nature, not with the rhythms and the weaknesses of greedy, financially, fiscally oriented men and groups and corporations, which are a blight upon, have become a blight now. They've gone well past their sell-by date in terms of usefulness. As have politicians. Because here's the king, King Charles, reading out the stuff that they've written about improving this and borrowing fiscally and all this kind of stuff. And yet, really, all of those things should not be things we're talking about at all. It's as if a game that sprang up hundreds of years ago, capitalism, has just rolled on and on and on and on. And technology, if we were but to stop and have a look at things, has in a way made it redundant. It's made it kind of irrelevant. I'm not arguing for the lack of enterprise or for not being an entrepreneur or sitting around and doing nothing. That's not what I'm suggesting at all. What I'm saying is that the game, has not the game actually changed in reality? We can all buy cars and things. Now we've got too many cars, they say. We could all have children. We haven't got enough children. Certainly our race hasn't got enough children. That's all by design as well. All these complications. Yet we still have politicians droning on about problems that if they were not here, these problems would not exist. So we do have a problem. The problem is this persistence of a political class that's dense. It's incapable of, dense is probably the wrong word. It's actually set up in such a way that it will never be able to recognize that it has become, in the great mass, surplus to requirements. Let's go back to this sheep shearing thing, right? Or combine harvesters. Back in the 1700s here in the UK, it took something, or in England anyway, it took 20 men working on the land to feed 24 men. That means that, you know, 1/6 of the population could go off and become barrel makers and coopers and lawyers and solicitors and all the other sort of glue that binds things together as you're creating an ever more involved and complex exchange system so that more goods and services can be produced and exchanged more easily and so on and so forth. That's really what we say progress is to some degree. When the combine harvester came along, I don't know quite when it did, but when, you know, the agricultural revolution arrived and implements began to reduce the amount of manpower, you suddenly had, obviously, manpower to do other things. And during the 1800s here, many people were pulled off of the land and driven into cities where you then get the slums and then you get Dickens talking about it and Benjamin Franklin when he was over here, he was talking about that too. And you're getting all that kind of stuff taking place. So the lack of need for all that manpower on the land meant that the manpower could go elsewhere because the food production challenge was getting solved very rapidly. And I think even today with the high-tech stuff, with satellites and all this, that and the other, and little robots, you've probably seen this stuff, the AI robots or whatever. Everything's AI now, isn't it? So, you know, these super clever things that we're never going to understand, according to the experts, right? These sorts of things. They can adjust crops. They can go around and micro-move them so that they're in line with the sun and the soil and all sorts of other wonderful things so that they yield up more stuff. Okay, great. It's a bit odd, a bit weird in many ways, and it's but it's there. You know, people are not going to lose this knowledge now that they've acquired it. Yet, and so because of this, less people work on the land. Less people work in heavy industry because we've developed other things. In fact, you could say we're able to produce more stuff with less people than ever before, except in one, probably more than one, but except in certainly in one particular area. And that's in the realm of politics, political bureaucracy, do-gooders, world organizations to sort out problems, which actually wouldn't exist, I'm suggesting, were it not for these worldwide organizations that exist to solve these problems. In other words, and this is not rocket science, I'm sure many of you have probably had a similar thought, the problems exist. They have to exist for these organizations to justify their existence. That is, politicians are actually in the business, unconsciously, probably, subconsciously, whatever way you want to do it, of creating the very theatrical problems that parade around in the news all day long, so that they can sit at the end of the hall going, we're going to solve this. We're going to solve it, they say. We're going to make everything better. We're going to get the economy sorted out. Oh, yeah. We're going to borrow responsibly. Really? We're going to keep inflation down. Why don't you fire 90% of you? Why is it that the staffing levels in these organizations, this centralization of control and assumed authority over our lives, why has that not been reduced by 90%? Why do we need so many people who have to tell us what to do? This is kind of a behavioral disorder, don't you think? Is it some kind of a disease? Therefore, you know, if people like us are a bit cross about these things, which we tend to be, I do, from time to time, and we go to them, we're never ever going to be able to get them to understand just what it is that is the problem. How can they see it? They're literally blindsided. In their world, they are really important, and they really do great stuff. And without them, the world would be in an absolute mess. Whereas what I'm suggesting is the world is in an absolute mess because there's too many of them. And if they were to solve these problems that they keep saying exist, you would need a lot less government, wouldn't you? And then we can get back to the proper way of living, which is individuals and particularly families being responsible for their own lives and working things out on a local level, naturally, easily, effortlessly, and with great joy and fun. Isn't that the way it's supposed to go? To get back to those home values that we all yearn for? I'm sure we do. And it's not sort of nostalgia or anything like that. The fact is that what masquerades as progress, it seems to me, is nothing of the sort. It's digress. It's all over the shop. But the common thread is we'll always need a bit more bureaucracy to sort it out, won't we? What he should have been saying is, and I'd like to write one of these things. Maybe I should try and write one. It's 10 minutes long, so I don't know how many words that is. And I could play the rest of it, but I don't necessarily need to because it's full of the similar sorts of observations. It was this theme that I really wanted to get going on here. What's obvious is that, particularly sort of from the banking point of view, is that no one's got a clue, really, how many people you would need if the thing was structured well. But it won't be many. I mean, we've got AI, right? I just mentioned it. We've got this AI thing. AI. We've got artificial intelligence. Okay? So, in my case, why is it that the people of England don't own the artificial intelligence centre that's going to manage and run the central bank perfectly? Could do, apparently, according to them. It's brilliant, you know, this thing. And then we don't need a city of London, and we don't need all of that crap that goes with it. We don't need that, you see. They're all dinosaurs, but very, very powerful dinosaurs who have called unto them lots of other people that are reliant on money. And when I was watching this thing earlier on in the week, and you look in that hall, and this will be the same in America and anywhere else where these types gather, and there may be one or two good ones in there, but honestly, am I going to try and knock myself out finding out who they are? I don't think so. And if they are good, they're certainly not going to be good enough. They won't be good enough to transform it, not from inside it like that. They're already sort of consumed by it. But when you looked at them all, if you saw it, or if you want to go off and look at it, won't necessarily advise it, you know, might need a strong drink. But when you look at them, and I just saw a lot of people who need to maintain the momentum in their lives, and they need to keep it that way because it gives them purchasing power. Not just fiscal purchasing power, but purchasing power in terms of political debate, political this, political that, that kind of stuff. So there you go. That was my... that's the show, by the way. What am I going to do for the next hour and 15 minutes? I have no idea. No, seriously, you might want to go and check it out. I won't play anymore. That was 2 minutes of King Charles. I was going to call him Prince Charles then. King Charles III reading out a script prepared for him by, in this case, the Conservative Party, a party which doesn't conserve anything apart from its own interests. The same criticism can easily and will be easily levelled at the Labour Party if they get in and so on and so forth. It's as if this entire structure really is ridiculous because technology has invalidated so many of the issues that they used to be have to say, you need us to solve all these things. So it's human nature to want power, certainly amongst these circles, and they've done everything they can to maintain it and keep pushing it through. So, yeah, brace yourself. Go and watch it if you like. There was another point I was going to mention, but it's run out of my head. Oh, yeah, sheep jokes. That was it, sheep jokes. I don't know whether this will travel or not, but we were talking about sport, weren't we, as well, a little bit earlier. So everybody in England's probably even heard this one. There's a great footballer. He's on rough times now because I think he's had a bad relationship with the bottle, I'm afraid, for a few years. So it's called, but a great footballer, really a naturally gifted working-class lad called Paul Gascoigne, who was, I suppose he fits the stereotype of an English football fan almost like. But he was particularly gifted and interesting, and a lot of people could relate to him. And the story goes that the England team were on a trip down in Australia and New Zealand for, I don't know, I suppose a pre-season tour or something like that. They do these sorts of things, you know, to get to know one another and, hello, I'm Brian. I'll be passing the ball to you at three minutes past four and all that kind of stuff. And they're in a hotel in New Zealand. So they come down to breakfast. This is probably not true, but it's still a good story. Who knows? You come down to breakfast and they're ordering breakfast. And he says, oh, I'll have a full English, please. You know, bacon and eggs and this, that and the other. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, sir, we don't have any bacon. He said, what? 90 million sheep and you haven't got any bacon. Listen to that. You know what? Telling jokes on the radio is not good because there's no one there to go. But that's an old one. Anyway, maybe it's one for your kids, right? If you've got some. And if you haven't, get some. Okay, so there we go. You know what? I probably need to play a tune, but I don't think I even lined any up for today. I've had a right hectic sort of week, really. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just announce the phone numbers again. So, and I'll just go through where we're on. We are currently running live on Rumble and Odyssey, although I haven't checked Odyssey, but I think we are. We're going out over wbn324.com, wbn324.zil, Z-I-L. We're also on Freefall Radio out of South Africa. We're on the Global Voice Network, I think we're on the Global Voice Network. And we're on Speak Free Radio. So there we go. Phone numbers. So if you want to call in, Joe did. Joe called in. Joe was nice. Joe called in and said hello. If you want to call in and say something, there's two ways you can do it. You can come in over the internet. You go to paulenglishlive.com/call. That's paulenglishlive.com/call. If you want to come in over the telephone, which I've just added today, it seemed to work fine, but any feedback on that, if you say, no, it sounds rubbish or whatever, would be appreciated. But I haven't had anybody saying it sounded terrible, so I'm assuming it works okay. The numbers are, if you're in the UK, and you'll see this, by the way, over on the Rumble, over on the Rumble chat. The dialing number for the UK is 0330 390 2135. That's 0330 390 2135. If you're in the US, you dial area code 605, then 313 5866. That's 605 313 5866, and then you enter a code, and the code you enter is 566 999. 566 999, and you'll see there's a nice lady or something, or an automated lady, and she'll say that. So if you want to call in, do that. And I'm just sort of testing it through today and all that kind of stuff. Right. Clips time. We were talking about, you know, we're nearly at the top of the hour. Look at that. Talked all that about the King's Speech. Was there anything else really, seriously, that I wanted to play? I'll just give you another minute. Let's see if there's anything here. Here we go. I played the first 2 minutes. Let's see what he says in the next minute.
Alongside this, my ministers will seek to attract record levels of investment in renewable energy sources and reform grid connections, building on the United Kingdom's track record of decarbonising faster than other G7 economies. My government will invest in Network North to deliver faster and more reliable journeys between and within the cities and towns of the North and Midlands, prioritising improving the journeys that people make most often. My ministers will strengthen education for the long term. Steps will be taken to ensure young people have the knowledge and skills to succeed through the introduction of the Advanced British Standard that will bring technical and academic routes into a single qualification. Proposals will be implemented to reduce the number of young people studying poor quality university degrees and increase the number undertaking high quality apprenticeships. My ministers will take steps to make the economy more competitive, taking advantage of freedoms afforded by the United Kingdom's departure from the European Union. A bill will be brought forward to promote trade and investment with economies in the fastest growing region in the world. My ministers will continue to negotiate trade agreements with dynamic economies, delivering jobs and growth in the United Kingdom. My ministers will introduce new legal frameworks to support the safe commercial development of emerging industries, such as self-driving vehicles, introduce new competition rules for digital markets, and encourage innovation in technologies such as machine learning. Legislation will be brought forward to support the creative industries and protect public interest journalism. Proposals will be published to reform welfare and support more people into work. My government will promote the integrity of the Union and strengthen the social fabric of the United Kingdom.
Wow. I shouldn't play any more, should I? Should I? I shouldn't play any more. We need to strengthen the fabric of the United Kingdom. Well done, Charles. So this is really just old Paddy Chews, like I said. If you want to hear the whole thing, it's about 10 minutes. You'll find it on YouTube. It's the whole speech. But I've covered the real principles of it. Now, I cast my eye over into the studio, and we have Patrick here in the studio. Hang on, let me just unmute the studio here. Patrick, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. How are you?
Well, I'm bumbling along. I'm bumbling along here on a fine, dark English evening. It's 9 o'clock. We're bumbling along. We've just been listening to King Charles. I hope you've been enjoying it too. We're all very, very happy and merry here in England with King Charles's speech and and the opening of Parliament and more going on. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, thank you. I'm out putting a new tire on my father's truck at the moment, and I was listening to your show, and I really appreciate your show. It's very nice.
You're bringing agricultural atmosphere to the show. Is that what's going on, Patrick?
Yeah, kind of, in a way, yeah. I drove my tractor into town. Yeah, that's agricultural enough.
It is.
It is. So I just wanted to remind you, I'm in your chat room on Telegram, and you had said you were going to play that musical song on Peace Bonds.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, well, there's about 4 minutes to go to the top of the hour, so you're calling up to actually remonstrate with me and make sure that I haven't even looked at what's been going on there in the Telegram group, and I haven't even mentioned it. I'm very, very bad at these sorts of things. I've got to get a little bit better. But yes, I've got it lined up. Don't worry. We're just coming up to the top of the hour in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
That's what we were going to do. So that's fine.
No worries. I just thought I'd call in and say hello.
That's fine. You don't shear sheep.
No, I don't shear sheep.
Okay.
The closest I get to is I take a torch to pig hair and scrape pig hair off on, when I butcher. That very agricultural where I'm at in Wisconsin. You know, we're known as the dairy state of the United States.
Are you known as
there you are.
All right, sorry.
Okay, Paul. I got you.
Yeah, no, the people of Wisconsin, are they known as cheeseheads? Are they known as cheeseheads? Have I got it right?
Yes, they're known as cheeseheads. Yes.
Right.
And we have our football team, the Green Bay Packers, and people wear a cheese. It looks like Swiss cheese on the top of their head. Anyway, I'll let you go, Paul. You have a good one.
Fantastic. Your song's coming up in a bit, and you're responsible for this, Patrick. So thank you very much, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
Keep good. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. Okay, that was Patrick there. So, yeah, just to let you know, I had a group here, about 30, 40 people, members in it. It's not... although I'm looking at it right now. Anyway, it being the top of the hour, let's play this little song, if I can just find it, and then I'll tell you what it is. It's, I need to be playing a few more songs, probably. Here we go. So, yeah, we're into the hour one. You're listening to Paul English Live here on WBN 324, and I'll say all that again after this little song. Here we go. Oh, you know, I keep doing that. One day, I'm not going to be as clumsy with this sort of stuff as I currently am, but that's not today, is it? Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, a limited number of the new Peace Bonds is still available. The price, a mere 23. Thank you, sir. You may claim your certificate when convenient. And you, madam, thank you very much. And you, sir, splendid. 4 for this gentleman here, thank you very much. 2 for the lady there.
Get your gilt-edged Peace Bonds offered at a price you want to pay.
A price you want to pay.
Come and get your gilt-edged Peace Bonds, gentlemen and ladies. We are practically giving them away. Ladies and gentlemen, a limited number of the old Peace Bonds is still available. The price, a mere 22.
22.
Someone selling Peace Bonds at 22.
Ladies and gentlemen, fortune has indeed smiled upon you tonight. I have been authorized to lower the price of the new Peace Bonds to 22. A splendid bargain.
Come and get your low-priced Peace Bonds. Step right up and get them while they last.
Get them while they last.
Get your low-priced Peace Bonds.
We promise you'll feel a perfect
are stranded empty-handed when this opportunity has passed.
That's right, 21, 21, 21, did I hear from you, miss? You'll take two.
Hey, 21, 21, 21, there's a man who's taking four.
Correct, 21, 21, 21, have I got this paper? You'll take eight.
Good, 21, 21, 21, there's one just bought eight.
Teach yourself to peace, Bonds, at 21.
Oh, Bonds at 20.
No one's buying our bonds.
Ladies and gentlemen, for a limited time only, new peace bonds for 20. That's right, 20.
Buy a 20 when 17 is plenty. We've got plenty to sell for 17.
17 then, 17 it is. New peace bonds for only 17. Who'll be first?
Why pay 17 when you can buy for 16?
They're loading their bonds, we're unloading now.
16 then, anyone at 16?
Old bonds at 15,
new bonds at 14.
12, 10, 8, 6.
It's low price, no price lower. If you find one, let us know. Fine!
Nathan, this is it. We've hit rock bottom.
Step right up and come and get them.
Just as soon as someone's got them, that's the end of our portfolio.
Keep selling and smile. Fine!
The price is it's a low price. These bottoms, step right up and get them while they last.
Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil and stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
I sometimes wonder whether my opinions are my own and whether they've been injected there by other things. Do you ever get that feeling? Welcome back to part two. You're listening to Paul English Live here at paulenglishlive.com in a rather rumbly, roughy-tufty sort of show this week for all sorts of reasons, which I won't go into. I've had a hectic sort of week. But fortunately, Patrick there calling in shearing pigs or whatever he's doing out there with his agricultural background for the Cheeseheads in Wisconsin. So always good to hear from him. And he was responsible for selecting that song. So if you didn't like it, there we go. Now, you may be saying, what on earth was it? And I think there's something slightly comic about it from a certain perspective. There was a musical that came out, I believe, in the 1970s, of which that was a track from it, called The Rothschilds. Did you know? Yes, it's true. A musical called The Rothschilds. And in fact, you can get the whole album if you want to. And if there's demand, we could play the whole lot. But I won't be playing it, and I probably wouldn't be listening to it. But there we go. So somebody thought, obviously, that The Rothschilds were definitely worthy of building a musical around, and so they did. Anyway, if you want more requests, more songs from that, stick something in Rumble, and I'll see if we could dig something up, and we can have a musical evening. By the way, I don't know, do people really like musicals? I've always found them a little bit odd. I never really liked them at all, actually. So, you know, there we go. Right, I've got a few clips here. One of the guys that's been popping up in and out of my space over the last few days is Patrick Moore. Now, we used to have a Patrick Moore over here in England, an astronomer with a slightly funny eye and an extremely eccentric manner, and very engaging he was too, but that's not the Patrick Moore I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Patrick Moore who was the founder of Greenpeace and the environmental nonsense. Is counteracted, rebutted by Patrick Moore all over the place recently. I don't know if you've seen some of these clips. He's quite excellent with this kind of stuff. And I wanted to play you a couple of them. Here's the first one. I think this is the first. Let me just listen to this. I think it's this one. Here we go.
It took 10 doubles only to go from 5 million people to 8 billion people in 7,000 years. Okay. That to me, I sit there and I say the following. I say, Al Gore's full of shit. I say AOC is definitely full of shit. The end of the world is in 12 years. Full of shit. But guess what? It is happening eventually. If we don't do something about it.
The end of the world?
Not the end of the
world. Or the end of human population growth.
The end of the capacity. Mm-hmm. What our capacity will be. So then we can think like Dr. Evil.
I can tell you one thing that explains why there went from 4 billion to 8 billion, for example.
Why?
It's called the Haber-Bosch process. It won two Nobel Prizes in the early 1900s. It was a formula, a technological process involving very high heat and very high pressure, an extremely complicated process, which was able to combine nitrogen from the atmosphere with natural gas to make ammonia. That ammonia is the basis of all the nitrogen fertilizer being used in the world's agriculture today. It results in at least a doubling of crop production. And that is why we see this news today about Sri Lanka banning nitrogen fertilizer and Netherlands now basically banning much of the nitrogen fertilizer. And this is the biggest threat we have right now to an immediate starvation situation in the world. Food shortage. You hear it said.
That's where I'm going.
The odd time.
Yeah.
But the reason it's self-inflicted, this food shortage. Nitrogen, the air has 70% of the air is nitrogen. We could take nitrogen out of the air for the next million years and make fertilizer because it all goes back into the air again eventually. Same with the carbon dioxide.
If we double two more times, we got 32 billion people here. We can't have 32 billion people in this in the world.
In other words, we won't double to 32. If we can't have it, we won't go there.
Why
we can't get
okay,
there.
Okay, so let's speculate. Tell me what you mean by that.
What I mean is today, people are getting wealthier. The number of people living in poverty as a percentage of the population is much smaller now than it was 20, 30, 50 years ago.
Yep.
When we reach a position where more and more people are going into poverty and starving to death, we will know we're coming close to that limit. How else are you going to find out unless you artificially reduce the population by cutting off the fossil fuels and by cutting off the nitrogen fertilizer? That's what the real problem is today. I'm saying this is a self-inflicted wound that we are dealing with right now. And it's a real problem because I can see this, that these powerful elites like Schwab and on down, they want control of the world. They want control of everybody. Now, what do they want? They want fewer people. They think it's already too many, I think. That's what they've been saying in the United Nations for a long time. But the facts don't bear that out because less and less people are living in poverty, and our knowledge of agriculture is growing, our knowledge of genetics is growing, and we're able to grow way more food now than we were then, and food is the basis of how many people can be here.
A self-inflicted problem, huh? So I wasn't aware of the Haber-Bosch process, and maybe you weren't either, but you are now. So without it, we're done for. And it's these knock-on effects with the manipulations, the front-end communication that they make to the public. There's a whole back end missing from the stuff that we are being led to believe. Look, I'm not saying necessarily you are being led to believe it. If you're an inquirer and a researcher and a tunneler into things, you will have come to the same sort of view, I think, or something approximating it, because it's difficult not to, isn't it? You look at these things and you realize that, you know, I mean, Patrick Moore there basically was addressing exactly what the problem is, which is that these people want complete control. I know I'm not saying anything new, but it's still new to a lot of people out there. And Moore's been around, you know, a while. So he forms Greenpeace. So, if we look at that as an organization, all of us, I think, would say, "Well, sure, you know, we like the idea of conserving things. That's what we want. We want things to be conserved. We don't want things to be wrecked and chewed up, and the overconsumption of things. We don't really see any reason for that." But because we receive all of our information courtesy of the screening that takes place because of the economic factors, so-called, it's very difficult, almost impossible for us to really know the true state of things, because the entire communication space is being permanently manipulated. Permanently. Here he is again, saying a few more things. Listen to this.
As I've stated publicly on many occasions, there is no definitive scientific proof through real-world observation that carbon dioxide is responsible for any of the slight warming of the global climate that has occurred during the last 300 years since the peak of the Little Ice Age. If there were such a proof, through testing and replication, it would have been written down for all of us to see. The contention that human emissions are now the dominant influence on climate is simply a hypothesis, rather than a universally accepted scientific theory. It is therefore correct, indeed, verging on the compulsory in the scientific tradition, to be skeptical of those who express certainty that the science is settled and the debate is over. But there is certainty beyond a reasonable doubt that CO2 is the building block for all life on Earth, and that without its presence in the global atmosphere at sufficient concentration, this would be a dead planet. Yet today our children and our publics are taught that CO2 is a toxic pollutant that will destroy life and bring civilization to its knees.
Yes, we are taught that, aren't we? And in fact, you may just recall a few moments ago when I was playing King Charles' speech, he was banging on about, because he'd received these lines to say, about Britain, the UK, leading the world towards net zero. So what that means is we're leading the world towards extinction. The UK is trying to go extinct. And who are you going to trust? Who are you going to trust on this? The thing about Charles is that, I think I might have mentioned this before, I've actually got this book of his kicking around the house. I never could really get into it. It's a wonderfully produced thing, and you can probably pick him up secondhand now for about £1. But 20 or 30 years ago, he was saying very intelligent, sensible things about the environment. He said very good things about architecture, I felt. He even designed a little village. And one of the I remember him doing a program where they were with farmers looking at real-world situations, growing food organically. Organically is just a way of saying naturally. You know, poo and things like that from the animals, the rotation of crops, the natural tending and stewardship of the earth in line with the forces of nature. You know, that thing, the thing that just works forever and is no trouble at all, apart from the trouble that you have to take to deal with it, particularly none now with all the progress in machinery. And yet there he is now, this week, saying that we're going to lead the world towards net zero. We don't want to, frankly. It's dense. And I think that's just another indication of the fact that these people have had to manufacture a problem or problems to continue to justify their existence. And I'm joined at this time today by Paul in the US. Paul, welcome to the show. How are you on this fine afternoon, I guess, for you, or maybe a dark afternoon by now? I don't know quite what it's like where you are.
Well, it's kind of dusky.
It's kind of dusky. It must be kind of dusky. What is it, 4:15 or something? Between, yeah?
Quarter past four. It's kind of right in the middle. It's trying to go from daylight to nightlight, and it's working on it. Mm. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, really. Yeah, I've had it's been a bumbling sort of week for me, all sorts of little things, and I'm kind of scattershot in my thinking today, but I don't mind that so much. There's a lot of things just bouncing around on my screen. I've had lots of little challenges at home, which have made life added colour, let's put it that way. I've had a lot of yes. colour added to my life this week, which has been quite interesting. I've also had a hole in my jaw this week, which has put me in a lot of pain. I had a tooth extracted years ago. Normally it's not too bad, and it's at the bottom. And every now and again, if anybody's had this, you'll know what I'm talking about. Every now and again, something sharp, I'm eating something, will cut into the gum, and it got infected. And so I've been... No. So not much fun. But I don't go to dentists anymore. And here's a tip for all of you... people who don't want to go to dentists anymore because you don't want them injecting stuff anymore, anesthetic into your jaw, and I certainly don't want that anymore, garlic. So I've been sucking garlic, Paul, all week. So I'm very, of course, people want to come up to me and be around me, of course, but it's most fantastic cure for all these things. I've had ever time my mouth gets in a bad way, and it's not too often these days, I just cut the garlic in half, a clove, put the new raw side into the sort of infected part of the mouth, and just, I've been sucking it for a few days. It's a bit like a course of antibiotics. It's actually better than antibiotics. I don't want to take antibiotics anymore. So, yeah, that's been my week. Well, it's been a bit of a tooth week, which has been coping with that. What's your week been like? Have you been having a lovely week, a better one than me?
Well, not to promote Crayola or anything like that, but do you remember when you were a child and you were in school and your parents would send a box of crayons with you because you had to bring your own crayons? And some of the kids in class had the 64-color crayon box.
Oh, those kids.
Well,
yeah.
This week is kind of... Yeah, this week for me has kind of been one of those boxes of crayons melted on the hood of a car in the hot sun. Yeah. That's pretty much the way my week has gone.
Wow.
But it's looking better though, because the week is almost over, you see.
It is. The year is almost
difficult for it to
get
worse.
The year is almost over, Paul, isn't it? I mean, I can't. Maybe it's not. There's a little way to go. You guys have got your, you've got Thanksgiving coming up in a couple of weeks' time, haven't you? In fact, is it 2 weeks today or something? Or is it on Thursday?
It is Thursday every year.
Yeah, well, it'll be 2 weeks today.
I have not done anything of any significance for Thanksgiving in 5 or 6 years, so I'll probably just hang out at home and order a turkey dinner and share it with the cat. So
I'll do that to show solidarity with you American types. We'll be having another turkey rolling up at the end of December as well. So I don't think I could face two turkeys in a month. It's just too much. Yeah.
Right. Well, some people do. They do turkey for Thanksgiving and then they do a ham for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one thing about your mouth issues, have you any food grade hydrogen peroxide around 3 or 4%?
No, I don't. Although that does keep coming. People keep mentioning that back to me from time to time and saying things, but I don't have any at the moment. Yeah, I've been doing all sorts. I'll get some food grade hydrogen peroxide. Yeah, I'll get some. Okay, I promise I'll get some. I've got to say that I can't recommend garlic enough. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing because I've had another part of my mouth where I get an abscess every now and again. So look, we're going into the medical field now, but it's very important actually because I think I've noticed as my years have passed by, if I get physically out of sorts, I feel like. You just don't feel like doing anything. There's nothing that you can bounce through. You just go, ugh. Everything just loses its color and its interest. And, of course, I've not been able to, you know, the thing about mouth issues is you can't eat properly, can you? And it's just so disappointing. Oh, no, I can put that in my mouth, but I've got to move it on the right side of the mouth or the left side and all this, that, and the other. And I've had so much hammer. I once went to a root canal. I know you shouldn't have these things, but you know, I was an ignorant, happy, whatever it was. I had a root canal back in the 1990s and, it turned into something absolutely bizarre because, I went for this root canal about 12 o'clock midday. I came back and about an hour afterwards when the anesthetic worked, I was in more pain than when I'd had it. And they'd done the root canal on the wrong tooth. I was quite pleased about
that.
Yeah. So this is a Friday. This is a Friday, and I'm thinking, oh no, I'm going to want to saw my own head off because I don't know about you. Of all the things, and I've banged myself up all sorts of places, lopped bits off, ground bits off my body. Seriously, been cut, bashed, busted my chin, tons of stuff. I was in and out of A&E quite a few times during my teenage years. I was one of those sorts of guys. I was always hitting things. I got hit by a skateboard once and bust a hole in my chin. All sorts of things like that. But tooth, and those things hurt, but the toothache, you can't think, can you? It's so near the brain, I just couldn't think about anything much. So it was, I called her back up, it's a lady dentist. It's in Wimbledon, you know, the home of tennis, but certainly not the home of good teeth servicing. I said, I think you've done the wrong tooth, love. She said, oh, I can't have. I said, honestly, I'm in agony. I've got to come back. So she said, okay, well, we do the other one. Anyway, what happened was that my mouth was so swollen from the first one that when she came to put more anesthetic in me, And I counted this. I was counting it on my fingers. The needle in the back of the jaw where it goes to hit the nerve, she put it in and out 26 times. I'm serious. It was over 2 dozen times until she finally got it. I was so full of, Novocaine, right? I was really quite happy by now. Anyway, that worked. I don't know whether it's of interest to the listeners, but here we are. We're talking about teeth right now. So this is just an aside. This is the tooth report from Paul and the two Pauls tooth report. And so it got done. So I had two root canals in one day. Beat that. And I went home feeling pretty good and a bit tired, though, you know. So I thought, it gets worse, by the way. This gets worse, right? So I go home and I'm feeling really relaxed but very tired. I thought, I'll have a bath, right? Because it's Friday and I've been working all week and my teeth were, you know, and I just thought, yeah, I'm obviously a bit ripe. Let's get in the bath, right? So I get in the bath and I'm feeling great in there. My wife-to-be is in the other room. And I'm in the bath for a bit reading, feeling okay, half asleep. Get out of the bath to sit on a chair next to the side of the bath. That's the last I remember. I remember. The next thing I know, I'm on the floor of the bathroom and I couldn't get up. I literally had no energy. I couldn't get up at all. And what had happened is I'd passed out and I couldn't move. So my girlfriend at the time, obviously this didn't put her off becoming my wife, but she had to call for an ambulance. It gets worse. It's so embarrassing. She has to call for an ambulance because I can't move. She said, "Can you move?" I'm going, not knowing quite what had gone on. Anyway, these guys come out and they're all wonderful and happy and chirpy and they take my blood pressure and they say, "Oh, you haven't got any blood pressure." I said, "No, I could talk a bit by this time." They said, "No, you haven't got any." I said, "Oh, that's a bit of a problem then." They said, "Yes." They said, "Don't get up. Keep your head on the floor." And I've learned that in future things, actually, whenever I've got lightheaded, you just get your head on the floor and get down as fast as you can, and then you won't fall over. And they told me that they said, what's been happening during the day? Well, of course, I'd not eaten all day because of the root canal thing. Yeah. And then they'd given me so much Novocaine. And what Novocaine does is it lowers your blood pressure. And then...
Oh, man.
Yeah, it really lowered it. And then a warm bath lowers it even more. They said, yeah. So if you hadn't taken the bath, you'd have probably been all right. I said, yeah, but I would have smelt. They said, yeah, you would have been smelly, but you would have not you would have passed out, right?
But you would have been alive.
Yeah. And I was alive now, obviously, you know, because I'm talking about it now. But it was quite dramatic. I always feel a bit embarrassed when things get so dramatic. You think, oh, God, stop making a fuss, you know. But it was just one of those things. Of course, how I laughed the next day, but particularly as I didn't have any toothache at all, which was the main point of the exercise. So at least that bit finally worked. But, they said, well, you get in the bath and all the blood literally disperses through your body. And when you got out of the bath, your heart goes to pump and there was nothing there. And that's why you collapse. There's another little thing I'll mention as well, because I do remember something about the losing consciousness process, which was really weird. You know, if you remember films like in the 40s and 50s, where they would have those tear-off calendars, you know, like a Rolodex, where the pages, the dates of the month would roll through one sheet after another. Do you know what I'm talking about? A bit like a Rolodex, those sorts of things. Right. I can't think of any particular film, but it was a sort of cinematic technique to show the passing of time. You know, the March, all the days of March go, and then April, and now we're here in May, and this, that, and stuff. Well, I was looking at the wall in this sort of semi-conscious state as I'm passing out or whatever. And as I look at the wall, it's full of all these, like, Rolodexes, a grid of them, maybe 10 by 10, like 100 of them. And they're all of them are all turning over at high speed. And they've all got images on them of my life. Like the whole thing, like I was downloading in some moment. It was really quite amazing. So I'm just looking at that. It's like everything that was in my head was just going and just turning over. Really bizarre. I don't know how I'd film that, but it was really quite a thing that, yeah. So I thought, oh, maybe that's not so good. Anyway, it turned out to be okay. So there you go. What were we talking about? Have you got a story like that? Come on. Well,
okay. Well, you remember the stories of like near-death experiences, NDEs, okay, mm-hmm. and the varying extents of which. And one of the common themes is that people say that they saw their life, their whole life, flash before their eyes.
Yes.
And I think that's exactly the thing that happened to you. Now, nobody knows what causes that. I've thankfully never experienced it. I'm so very sorry that you experienced it.
I don't know. It's kind of groovy. And when I thought about the technique of just having all these loads, like 100 different squares in front of me on a wall, and I could see the image, and everything's happening all at once. It was like, I thought, oh, yeah, that's a way of actually getting through the entire memory bank really, really fast time. It's just like gazillions of, tons and tons of images flashing through really, really quickly. I was quite sort of bedazzled by it, really. And I think that somewhere in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, no, I'm downloading. It's all finished. This is the end of my personal calendar, you know. Of course, it wasn't. But yeah, there was that. Anyway, so there we are. So there you go, dear listeners. Whatever you do, don't have two root canals in one day. And if you do, don't have a hot bath either, because it's likely right. to go pretty bad, I think. But from personal experience, it went bad for me, unless you're, you know, it might not go bad for you, but it didn't go so good for me, I have to say, yeah.
My question,
yes?
question, and I'm sure it's a question that's on everybody's mind. Did you ever go back to that oral surgeon again?
You know, probably I did for a checkup. I think I probably did. Yeah, I don't know. My mum said about teeth. She said, I have the same set of teeth as my – I don't have her teeth, of course. But, you know, you take after your mum or your dad in certain respects. So I took after my mum, and she had a similar – she had a problem with her molars. Her front teeth were great, as are mine. But she said, my molars are so soft. She's always having fillings and this. And I've been pretty much the same as that, really. I suppose I really need to get this mercury out. And the last one I had a cap, and it's gold. I said, I want gold. Oh, that's a bit old-fashioned. I said, I want the gold. Get it in there. Because, of course, it's not toxic either. And it's hidden right at the back of my mouth, so you can't even tell. I don't look like some sort of gypsy with a gold tooth or some pirate. Not yet. Not anyway, yeah, you know. So... So there we go. So, yes, mouths, yeah, they're quite amazing things, aren't they? All that bacteria and stuff. So there we go. Tonight's show's really being about dentistry, everybody. It wasn't planned, but this is how these things
at least a third half hour.
Yeah. No, it's been fantastic. Yeah, it's great. So if you've got any good dental stories that you want to call in about my, you know, how I killed a dentist or whatever, call in and or connect up with us. The details are over at rumble.com. You should be able to see them there. By the way, just as I was talking about that, just a couple of comments. There's one from Warren App Arthur 503 to 57. I love that. That's a really good handle, Warren App Arthur. Fossils are not any type of fuel. Correctamundo. Absolutely. And also this thing about oil as well, you know, that there's not enough oil and all that kind of stuff. It's abiotic fluid, isn't it? It's the natural sort of sap produced by the earth. All of these, well, you know, Paul, don't you, that practically everything that we are taught as the traditional view is 9/10 manure, at least, nearly 9/10 of it. It's completely, you know, bewilderingly mad, most of it.
Yeah, it's all dialectics. It's all upside down and backwards.
It is.
So.
It is. And King Charles was playing his role just there, doing it, you know, reading out this nonsense.
Yes.
Yeah, we all want to get to net zero, Charles. It's just going to be great. It's like, and while you're at it, why don't you have two or three root canals in the morning and see what happens there? Because that it's going to be as great as that. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know, so...
Right. Well, yeah. What's going to happen if we get to net zero is there won't be any fuel left for the trees to make oxygen. So while we're busily reducing carbon dioxide emissions, mm-hmm. the trees are going to be going, you're not giving me anything to work with here. Giving me anything to work with.
So, I know, and I hope they speak like that.
If the rainforests aren't in trouble.
If they speak like that, Paul, the forests will be quite fun places to go. I wouldn't mind listening to a forest having a go at me like that. You know, I had another clip which I couldn't find from from Patrick Moore again. He's been just yakking all over the place recently, or at least that's my what's been coming across my desk. And you mentioning trees has just sparked me off with the comment that he made. He was, you know, this thing about we've got to get clean energy and all this kind of stuff and the reduction of energy. And the point he made, this is just another point. This is about these knock-on effects that these... You see, either they do think about it and then pretend that they haven't thought about it, or they're literally dense and can't think about it. I'm going for the latter. Or their so-called scientific advisors, maybe I had it right the first time, their scientific advisors are also malinformed in some way. He pointed out that if we get this reduction in energy systems, if we're supposed to all go over to wind turbines and all this other guff that doesn't work, I mean, it's complete rubbish, right? He said, what do you think is going to happen in places that get very cold? You know, like up in Canada. Not that there are a huge number of people in Canada, but still. And all across Russia. Anywhere where it gets cold. Right? He said, what's going to happen is they're going to do what human beings have always done. They're going to chop trees down. He said, they'll go and cut down so many trees to stay warm that the trees won't be pumping out any oxygen, then we're all going to die. You see, the whole thing is balanced well by nature, but some bloke comes along and says, oh, I know how to do this, we'll do this a little bit better. Now, up to press, we've kind of got away with it, but even the idea of, you know, the idea of coal-fired power stations being bad is a nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. About 6 months ago, I'm in the supermarket doing one of my shops, buying beans or something interesting like people do, you know, and I'm queuing up, and there's an elderly couple just behind me, and they were great. And we were just ended up talking about something at some point. And, they stuck a wind farm where I live out in the sea. You can see this thing, £1,400 million this thing cost. It's junk. It's absolute junk. The whole thing's junk. And I always look at it and I just think it should be called, you know, the backhander wind farm, because that's all I see when I look at it. Who was getting a backhander on this? That's all you can see. The thing's rubbish. They say, oh, it lasts 25 years. Yeah, really? and of course, it creates more CO2 being built than it's saving. The whole thing's asinine beyond belief. Anyway, I was talking to this woman. And I said, well, we need to bring back coal-fired power stations. She said, oh, you sound like my husband. I said, do I? She said, here he is. Talk to him. So he was right there. So we just ended up talking about coal-fired power stations. Years ago, I don't know if I mentioned this before, maybe about 20 years ago, I was working at looking at all sorts of energy systems with some good people that I still know in Germany and Holland. And they came across a group of people out in Northern California. I've lost contact with them, and they were pretty old in the tooth at the time, so they may no longer be with us. They had some very interesting ideas. They had one that was very basic, which I thought at the time was probably one of the best. They had some kind of a liquid or a spray system that they had come up with. And no doubt there's probably information about something like this. So that the coke or the coal or whatever it is that goes into coal-fired power stations was sprayed with this stuff, which was very low cost. It didn't cost much to make this stuff, so it didn't add much to the whole cost of the cycle, and it reduced the pollutants from the emissions from the stack down to 0%. It took out everything, absolutely everything. The whole idea of making us net zero is ludicrous for so many reasons, not only because it's mad right at the tail end of things, as you've pointed out, and as everybody else knows, but also because I think recently the Chinese have built 250 coal-powered fire stations. What's the point? Right. They built 250. Oh, yeah, we need power. We're going to get on with it. You know, they don't... Oh, so we'll make it nice and tidy here and die, and they'll thrive as an industrial economy, which, of course, we don't need that either, as far as I'm concerned. I think this is all mad, you know, this overproduction of crap that lasts 10 minutes so that you can produce some more in another 5 years. And they're just going to crack on. Nobody raises these things whilst he's making his speech. There's no sense in it. It's just sort of like a kid's pantomime. It's embarrassing. Of course, they don't mind being embarrassed because they get paid, don't they? That's the reason why they're there. They got to get paid, you see.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
unfortunately. Now, if they were really serious about solving the green issue, if they were really serious about being able to generate power without destroying the planet, why don't they just stop killing the guys that invent all of the efficient energy systems, the free mm-hmm. energy systems, the running cars on water broken down into its components, hydrogen and oxygen?
Yep.
I mean, they stop killing the inventors, we'll be way ahead. A windmill, a wind farm, each individual unit takes 25 years to pay for itself, and it's rusted and falling down inside of 10. The same thing with solar power, solar energy.
Yeah.
The electric cars and all that, the batteries are positively toxic. They're destroying the planet, and they are carbon positive, like in a multiple fashion, just to manufacture that car. It costs more in energy expense to manufacture that car than if that car was internal combustion powered. It's ridiculous. It's all lip service. It's upside down. And only the sleeping liberals that are, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't pick on liberals. I'll just say the sleeping masses that are still hypnotized by their TVs. And they're the only ones that believe this line of horse muck.
I think you're right. I did see an encouraging little sub-headline somewhere today or yesterday that the sales of electric vehicles are beginning to drop precipitously. And this is because the PR is out. Basically, people are getting really clear that the as a technology, it's completely stupid. No one's actually against electric cars. What we're against is battery cars. It's the battery technology. Right. It's useless. And it really is. I mean, it's ridiculous that this thing weighs so much and that they have to get these Africans to go down into these pits and dig up cobalt. A really dangerous thing. And they're dying, these young kids, and they don't care, and we're not supposed to talk about this. You know, I was listening to someone talking about Musk the other day. Who was it? I think it was on Rents, actually. They had someone on who'd done quite a bit of investigation into Musk. And is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Well, he's famous, isn't he? So he's a bad guy. I mean, the guys that you referred to, the guys that invent things that we never hear about, the ones that have got no money, like us and the listeners. Hello, everyone. We're the good guys. You can tell who the good guys are because they're on their uppers, right? If you're being fated by the system and you're being financially supported by it, that means you've compromised with it. And ultimately, you're a cul-de-sac. I mean, all of them, you know, all these talking heads. Many of the talking heads in the alternative so-called information space are exactly the same, it seems to me. You know,
for sure.
Yeah, we can't, you know, so we're really looking for poor people. We're looking for you people who are struggling like mad, and swearing. Well, then we know that you're likely to be telling the truth more than anybody else. You know, it's a terrible.
Hey, I resemble that remark.
Me too. It's a bad invite, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hi, you know, do you want to be poor all your life and tell the truth? Yeah, well, you better get stuck in. You know. Yeah.
I think one of the principal things that are like, people are actually coming to the realization that we don't even have a power grid in place that can handle charging them all. Without doing rolling blackouts across, you can only charge your electric car between 2 and 4 p.m. Sorry! Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It is. What we're doing here is not ridiculous in terms of pointing this out. And more of that. And we need to structure it more. I mean, I sometimes more suggestions of any sort of sort out the wheat from the chaff. I mean, and maybe, I suppose, some of us at times, some of this is wheat, and at other times, maybe some of it's chaff. You know, I'm always looking to remove the chaff from my own thinking and catch it fast enough, you know, before you start sending it out all over the place. But in the interim, we must keep pounding on with that kind of stuff. By the way, somebody... the opening bit, a feeling for beauty. It seems to me that this is key. All about Roger Scruton, and somebody kindly said that documentary by Scruton is available on the net, and it's definitely well worth watching. Roger Scruton on beauty, wonderful bit of work. Yes, do that, do you? Oh, you've gone. Hang on. There we go.
No, I'm not there.
Oh, you're here now. I don't know what happened.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all right.
Well, I think I do. I don't know. We might be striking a chord because I had a network attack go on, and the stream was. I am streaming you to Global Voice Network, absolutely, but I'm on two different networks. The system that streams your show to my network is not the system I'm using to talk to you, and the one I'm using to talk to you just got attacked. So, oh well. So
I can see the wires. I can see the wires coming out of your head. From here, I can just see them. There's far too much going on, isn't there? Hey, I'll just do a quick shout out with everything here. You're listening to Paul English Live at paulenglishlive.com. I'm here with Paul, another Paul from the US, who's a regular connection here on the show, which is wonderful. We're going out live on WBN324.zil. WBN324.com, Freefall Radio out of South Africa, Eurofolk Radio, Speak Free Radio, Rumble, Odyssey, and the Global Voice Network, which is Paul's situation. So we're carried in quite a few places. This is a work in progress. This is show number 10, so I'm in double digits now. So I'm out of my infancy and stuff like that. Paul, I'm going to play a little song. I know it's a strange time to play one with only 17 minutes to go, but I'm going to play one. This is a classic, and it's got nothing to do with what we're talking about, and you might not have heard it. Here we go. Quite a vocal performance, I think, there. And that's not the sort of thing I tend to listen to too much, actually, Paul. But that's a very rare sort of band, I think, from the 1960s. I was a little boy at the time, so I never heard it. But that's it's called a group called Smith. And that's Gail McCormick on vocals. I thought they were pretty outstanding. You ever heard that one before?
No, never heard of it. I've never even heard of the band.
Yeah.
Never.
I know. Very rare, actually. I've got Eli James to thank for that. Somebody called in earlier and mentioned Eli. So, Eli, if you're listening, I hope you're getting well. He had a little bit of a moment over the weekend. So we don't like people to have moments like that. But I think he's okay for now. But, yeah, Gail McCormick sang that. She's quite outstanding, really. So I guess they were just one of those many, many bands in and around the 60s that did certain things. And as I said, it's not the sort of music I normally listen to, but I just quite like that vocal performance. I think it's pretty good. So there we go. Maybe I'm just getting nostalgic for Nira. I wasn't even conscious of Paul at the time. I don't know. But, yeah, there we go.
Well, you and I did the 60s at about the same time and the same age. So, I mean, we're very close in age.
I guess. Close. So. Yeah, kind of looking up at larger people being hippies. Filthy hippies. I think my first recollection there was a festival at the Isle of Wight in 1970 or something, and it was on TV, or at least there was a lot of footage of it. And that was the first time I'd seen people with very long hair, because I was 9 or 10 years of age at the time. And my father frowned upon this with great disdain and thought, look at them, long hair. It was great. Oh, to get back to those days again, they were a lot of fun, actually. A lot of fun, yeah, in many ways. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I wonder how many federal or state subcommittees and committees and everything else, governmental agencies that would be required to solve the hippie problem. I mean, they're trying to solve everything else. So,
I know. Well, what are they now? Are they hipsters? Are hipsters today's hippies? Are they? I don't know. In retrospect, I wouldn't mind being Wing Commander Major, blah, 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 and being all stuffy about it. I kind of like those characters. I think they're really rather fun. Do you know what I mean? I think they're really rather fun. I saw a story, yeah, actually, just today, before I came on. I don't know if you've seen this one. You know these guys go around gluing themselves to roads, these environmental protesters, which is tragic in itself that they've been so easily misled into all this kind of stuff. It's just, we've got to stop harming the planet. Do you know how big it is and all that? I mean, I'm not against the thrust of what they're talking about, but the specifics are so far out and completely off beam. You know, the idea that you want to care for the planet and all that kind of stuff, okay, great. But there's not, as we said earlier, there's not much point you doing it if China are building 250 coal-fired power stations, is there? Right? So I'm not arguing, therefore, that we should build 250 coal-fired power stations, but even with nuclear power stations, I don't know if I'd mentioned this before, but there are certain designs for nuclear power stations. And the ones that, most of the ones in America are the wrong design, as are probably the ones over here. Right. They're, yeah, the ones that produce this toxic waste that lasts 50,000 years or something stupid, right? Oh, we'll measure this and sink holes in the ground and we know what's going on. Yeah, great. I really trust you to do that. Where there's another design that basically keeps reusing the fuel. I forgot the name of it. And they're just as, yep, they're the same. Yeah, you might know. And so the fuel is spent once, then you take it and you run it through again and again and again. You can run it through loads of times. By the time you've extracted just about every useful bit from it, it's got a half-life of like 30 years. I go, there you go. We can cope with that. We can deal with that. But no, they're the ones that haven't been designed. And, you know, one of the ideas, I don't know whether I'd thought of this. No, not really. I'm not that bright, but I must have read it somewhere. Of course, nuclear power stations are just great ways for manipulating countries, aren't they? You go, well, we don't need a big army to wipe you out. We'll just drop a little bomb in your nuclear power station. That'll wipe out most of that urban area. Oh, that's what they're there for. That's why they put them in, isn't it? For these levers for manipulation and control.
Well,
and, I think in part.
Okay, there's Chernobyl, mm-hmm, Chernobyl, Fukushima, you know. All these catastrophes. Now, were those actual catastrophes or were they false flags? I don't know.
I don't.
And even the ones where those catastrophes occurred, there were things that they could plant. They could throw like hemp seeds out the back of an airplane while they're flying over, because hemp is carbon negative. It'll actually draw in those toxins and get rid of them.
I know.
Come on.
Hemp's amazing.
There are inexpensive ways to do it.
It's amazing, is hemp. It's absolutely stunning stuff. I mean, Ford did a lot of things with hemp. I contacted a company over here that make hemp bricks, which are they're a bit more expensive, yep, but they're brilliant. It's still, I think, against the law to drop hemp seeds into the Thames. It's probably still against the law. It became against the law pretty rapidly because, obviously, it being a major thoroughfare of shipping, what happens is you drop a hemp seed in the Thames, it's just going to grow. These things grow like it's wow. Is it not known as the Godzilla of the plant world? It grows anywhere, and it's just amazing what it does. And it was tangling all the anchors up. So you get heavily done. You couldn't have hemp seeds. They were very heavy on that kind of stuff. And speaking of nuclear things, because this is a tenuous link, but I've got this clip and I wanted to play it. You remember Dr. Strangelove, the film about the nuclear war by Stanley Kubrick? Yeah. Well, it also had this scene in it. Listen to this. It's a minute and 20 seconds. This is just a bit of entertainment here towards the end of the show. Here we go.
Have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation? Fluoridation of water?
Yes, I have heard of that, Jack, yes. Yes.
Well, do you know what it is?
No. No, I don't know what it is now.
Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face?
Andre. Realize that in addition to fluoridating water, where there are studies underway to fluoridate salt, flour, fruit juices, soup, sugar, milk, ice cream, Mandrake, children's ice cream.
Gosh. You know when fluoridation first began?
I don't get that.
1946. 1946, Mandrake. How does that coincide with your post-war commie conspiracy? It's incredibly obvious, isn't it? A foreign substance is introduced into our precious bodily fluids without the knowledge of the individual, certainly without any choice. That's the way your hardcore commie works.
Do you remember that scene, Paul?
No, I don't, and I am going to watch Dr. Strangelove as soon as we get off the program.
Yeah, that was Sterling Hayden. Sterling Hayden was this base, he's a fantastic role by Sterling Hayden. He plays this base commander who's gone off his rocker because he suspects the commies, of course. And the British office there is played by Peter Sellers doing his best sort of British hello, that kind of thing. And at the time, of course, it's very funny, but the truth of it is that fluoridation is a problem. So it was like they were putting it in plain sight right in front of your face to mock the Sterling Hayden character. He's obviously barking mad. You know, he's talking about fluoridation in the water, but fluoridation in the water is a commie plot. It really is a commie plot to make people mm-hmm. stupid and all that kind of stuff, you know, and that's kind of what had happened. So, yeah.
Well, it's a globalist plot.
Yes, it is. It's a globalist plot to affect all these different things. I mean, I think the whole thing with the climate thing is so... I can't believe they're still pushing it. It's like the naffest play in town. Everybody's sort of looking at them going, are you still going to keep on with this ridiculous lie? Is that what you're going to do? You're going to keep pushing this ridiculous lie that... that there's something wrong with the climate and that you've got to control it by removing carbon dioxide. It's they've really run out of control. You know, that's the whole thing. I mean, I think this comes the history of this, it comes out of the Club of Rome, doesn't it, in the early 60s. They have to weaponize the planet against us. All of these artificial things, I suppose they must be petrified of what happens if we just become buoyant and happy. They don't want that. If you've got huge numbers of people that are reasonably happy and contented and we've got everything sorted out, they're going to start thinking things, and they don't want that. They don't want you to start thinking things that they don't get to regulate. So it's a very, it's like a completely, there's no compromise with this situation. They want to be in control, and we don't want to be controlled. And the means, of course, the technical means now exist to remove the idea that controls are needed. Yeah, in terms of crises, everybody goes, yeah, well, we've got to get organized. But there aren't any natural ones. All of the crises are bogus. They're all artificially generated, aren't they?
All the wars were bankers' wars. They're the only ones that made the money.
That's right. All the wars were bankers' wars. Died. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The people died.
Yeah.
Cultures were annihilated.
Mm-hmm.
The planet was ravaged. Mm-hmm. And it was all for the value of the almighty dollar. And all for the benefit of them and them alone. It's ridiculous.
It is. Well, it's not about money. You know one thing? What time are we going? We're getting towards the end. We've got a couple of minutes. I need to probably go over this in between now and next week. But you remember Aaron Russo? He's no longer alive. He was cancered, I would suggest, is what happened to him. But he did that documentary, America, Freedom to Fascism, about 2006, some time ago now. But I remember it at the time. Mm-hmm. It's quite brilliant because just a minute. Have I got this set up right? I don't think... Sorry, something's just flashing here. Oh, no, it is right. That's correct. I think it's all correct. He did this documentary, and Nick Rockefeller was one of his pals. And there's a bit in it when he's talking about Rockefeller talking about the money and these other things. He said, it's not about the money. He said, it's about control. He said, we got all the money we want. And they have, of course. You know, they've got all the money they want. They've had all that for a long time. So it's about readjusting things in line with rich men's desires and all this kind of stuff. So there we go. Paul, that's the little outro tune. Here we go. We're down to our last 90 seconds as we fade out. Yeah, let's just leave that there at that level. So
one point I'd quickly like to make before we leave everyone. Inflation is inflation. It's inflation by design, because there is no money until you actually borrow money, and that is what puts money into the financial world. So they have to continue to inflate things, because the more things cost, the more money is generated by people borrowing it. So it's a bubble, and it's going to burst. Try not to be on the bad side when it happens.
We're just going to have to reconnect at a local level and sort things out again, I suppose. I mean, I think there's also possibly something that could come out of left field that we've not anticipated in a logical way. Something, you know, people talk about a paradigm shift and a contextual shift. These are grandiose things, but they do happen. And we have to think that they will. We're down to the last 20 seconds. Thank you, everyone, for being with us. You've been listening to Paul English Live here at paulenglishlive.com on WBN 324, Speak Free Radio, Eurofolk Radio, the Global Voice Network, Rumble Odyssey, and Freefall Radio out of South Africa. We'll be back here next week. See you then. Stay safe.